This is Sheila Blake, and I'm with Tom Zanakis and my husband, Peter. We're going to do a very interesting show today, something different. We have an artist experience page on Facebook where we put images of the things we're talking about. It's also a place we'd love our listeners to give us ideas and feedback. Please look at it while you're listening. And you can stream this program on TacomaRadio.org. Also, we're putting podcasts of this show on my website, SheilaBlake.com. And on artistexperience.com, so you can listen at any time. And the podcast can also be found on iTunes.
Good morning, everyone. A few days ago, I was online in U.S. Customs and Immigration at the airport, and I turned around, and there was a mass of humanity, people waiting on meandering lines at the U.S. Customs. These are people from all walks of life, young and old, various religions, races, ethnicities, colors of all peoples in the world were right there in the airport. And they were holding U.S. passports, and it was just a line for American citizens. The image of this mass of humanity struck me. I said, like, wow, this is a powerful image, and this is the power of America, a place where diversity is something that we've been proud of for centuries and a place of great power and strength. I stepped back and I asked myself, where are these people come from? How do they identify themselves? Do they identify themselves as part of a human race by their citizenship, maybe their ethnic group, maybe their religion, their gender, or even their sexual orientation? Identity means a lot of things to a lot of people, and it's often different. But it's important in the development of a person, and especially in the development of an artist. And it doesn't matter what kind of artist you are. It's really important to have an identity as an artist. Today we're going to explore a new exhibition at the Phillips Collection near DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C. Sheila and I haven't been there in a while, and this deals about identity around the globe in many ways. And Sheila, Peter, and I wanted to take you to this fascinating, different exhibition about people displaced and moving around the globe in search for possibly a better life.
This exhibition is in partnership with the new museum in New York City. It's titled The Warmth of Other Suns, Stories of Global Displacement. It's on till September 22nd, and I want to say this show, you have to see it. You cannot just hear it from us. We'll do our best, but it's amazing. And you'll want to go more than once, as we will go more than once. It presents works by 75 artists relating the experiences and perceptions of migration and the current global refugee crisis.
The title comes from lines from Richard Wright in his memoir, Black Boy. I'll read them. I was leaving the South to fling myself into the unknown. I was taking a part of the South to transplant in alien soil, to see if it could grow differently, if I could drink of new and cool rains, bend in strange winds, respond to the warmth of other suns, and perhaps to bloom.
Well, thank you for that, Peter. It's always great having you on the program because you really know how to recite a poem. Anyway, well, you know, identity has been a really important issue for me as an artist since I started doing work in the early 1990s. How I saw myself on this globe, and, you know, how the influence have shaped me and my work and my identity. Where was I coming from? How was I going to respond to it? And I wanted to be true to that identity as a person. For me, ethnic identity, religious identity, creative identity were important. Was I American? What race was I? What was my gender and sexual preference identity? These really weren't really as important to me. So I was always uncomfortable when I was used to take a survey. You know, I used to take a survey, you know, what's your race?
Right.
What's your gender? Those things always really bothered me because I never
too.
Thought that was important. It's kind of really weird. But everybody's different. And Sheila and Peter, you know, how do we think about, you know, our identities and how they were shaped as human beings, as artists? What do you feel for your identity on this earth? And I think that's an important part of this this show that we saw because a lot of these people are searching for a new place, a new home. They're displaced. They're refugees. And Sheila, no song could have been more perfect than your choice for Tom
All
Petty
right.
and Refugee. So thank you, because that brought back a lot of memories. At the same time, I was searching for my identity.
Well, this show is really remarkable. Humans have been migrating and exploring the globe since we became humans,
Absolutely.
Since we could move. My own grandparents came from Lithuania, and they migrated to England and then to Brooklyn. We moved to our neighborhood in Queens, Kew Gardens, that when I was 11. And that neighborhood was largely settled by Jews from France and Germany at the beginning of World War II. It was planned to look like a village in England with Tudor houses and lots of trees, but it wasn't as restrictive as the gated planned community, Forest Hills Gardens. That was really the classy place.
Yeah, that was upscale.
Yeah, and you had to paint your houses certain colors and things like that. But that was right across Union Turnpike. My friends all spoke French and German at home and English at school. And their parents saw themselves as intellectual elites, even though they lived in apartments. They always had lots of books and paintings on the walls. They had terrible stories of wading waist high in water for days and nights and of losing their professions. My parents came here earlier in their last generation, but they sort of got in on the guise of being intellectuals. They were all snobs as far as I was concerned, talking about Beethoven and old and rare books and the difficulties of living in New York with the dust and the dirt. But in fact, they'd lost so much. They lost professions they could never recover and customs that their kids would ignore. Their French names were translated into American names like Bunny and Bobby. And the Puerto Rican kids were fascinating from afar. They were dangerous and attractive when the Jewish boys were sort of sweaty. Who cared if they won science awards?
Oh, goodness, Sheila.
Myself, I was a little out of control and labeled a bad influence.
For sure.
But that's definitely part of my identity as an artist, wouldn't you say? It's
yes.
part of it. Artists are not like well-behaved people. But the Holocaust was ever present. It was a suffering to me. It was the suffering that grown-ups seemed to wallow in, the 6 million Jews. But that meant nothing to me until I saw these photographs in Life magazine of the skeletons piled up, and I read that lampshades were made from their skin.
Goodness.
In the Great. 70s and 80s, these middle-class Jews retired and moved to Florida and sold their homes to a new group of immigrants, the Iranian Jews. They came with huge suitcases. We thought there was money in the suitcases, maybe. And they gutted their houses, left the front walls intact, and built huge additions that filled every square foot of their backyards because they had big families and they all moved in there. So that's my experience with immigration. Growing up in America in the 40s and 50s. And my experience was that immigrants had to sacrifice for a better life for their children and their grandchildren. And for support, they joined with other families who had similar lives. To me, immigration never seemed bad. It seemed more like the natural order of things because all of us kids had it pretty good.
Yeah. I guess I represent a different culture, the one we liberals are having such a hard time with. I can't exaggerate the extraordinary uniformity of my suburbs. It was all white people, no foreigners. Jews lived in the other subdivision on the other side of the highway.
Ah.
Yeah, that was the only difference until I went to college. And, you know, it brings up to me the something about this show, political art. We often are tempted to think, but it's not really going to change people's minds, because partly we're thinking about the opposition. But in fact, art like this expands our range of empathies. There was a philosopher, I forget who it was, who said that liberals are people who think that cruelty is the worst thing you can do. So people who read a novel or go to a show like this, their range of who they consider to be like them expands. And that certainly was the effect for me of this show.
You know, I think, Peter, that's a really good point. I mean, in fact, all kinds of art does that. Mm-hmm. It opens people to experience and who creates the experience, the people that are expressing themselves. And I think that's the wonderful joy of all kinds of art forms in that sense. Art is known to bring people together. And, you know, we're sitting here in the radio studio here, and I'm looking around the room, and all of us have different experiences of identity, of who we are, where we came from. And in that sense, sharing that is a kind of a glue to humanity, and there's something really beautiful, and I think that's why this exhibition, which I think is so different for the Phillips, is actually really important in addressing a current event issue about displacement and identity, and it's affecting so many people around the globe. We just get snippets in the news, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of people out there, you know, our everyday struggles of trying to find a new home, trying to identify, and it could be all sorts of political, economic reasons, even weather, you know, could make people move. I mean, we all have, immigration stories. I certainly could do a whole show, and Sheila could probably do a whole show about this, because, you know, our people were pretty recent, you know, immigrants to this country. So it's happening right here in our own backyard, and I think I have to praise the Phillips with this exhibition, because it puts art in a currency that's really hot topic right now.
Yeah, it is. I have to say, you know, this is not a moment of listening to the news or opening up the newspaper that you're not hearing and seeing images of, it's, you know, horrors of not just immigration, but the quest to find a life that you can actually live and for your children. And there's so, I mean, it wrenches my heart. It really does.
Well, you know, we went to this show, and, you know, we coincidentally walked into the exhibition space, and this is a huge exhibition. Mm-hmm. It takes up the whole museum in some ways. And then we saw a film by John Okomafra from 2015, and it's titled The Vertigo Sea. It's a long film, and it's, I don't know if it was a 48 minutes or an hour and 48 minutes, I really forget, but it was a wow experience in entering the exhibition. And I think, I don't know if that was a mistake for us, but we entered into this space of three large movie screens. It kind of, we could have done a whole show on that,
yeah,
that one film,
yeah,
The Vertigo Sea. So we want to start off talking about that, because I think it is a crucial aspect of the exhibition and a visual bombardment of things about who we are and how we identify in this human experience.
Yeah, we walked into the middle. We didn't know what we were going to see, and it was completely immersive, this experience. And on the three screens were separate images that kept relating to each other and moving in and out. And the first thing I saw was, and now I know it was a depiction of slaves being pushed off a ship into the freezing waters. And they were sort of looking back at surprise, like, and then taking that leap. And then their bodies washed up on the shore. So this set the tenor for the emotional content of this film, which was also very beautiful. It had a lot of underwater creatures, photographs, but it was beautiful and it was horrifying at the same time. And there were also some things, the music, first of all, the sound was a big deal.
Oh, yeah, it was.
And the sound of the film was very powerful. And then there were some weird things like images of clocks. And I don't know what they were doing in there, but Do you know?
Well, that surreal aspect was really important, yes. And I think it's about time in the sense of evolutionary time, human time, and how we see. Because remember, they were also dealing with a lot of animals and plant life and stuff like that, and how time really affects all of us.
That makes sense, because there was current images and archival images and reenactment and even a strange tableau. Well, that was where the images of the clocks came in.
Well, you know, Sheila, talk a little about the content of the film, because there were specific things that were repetitive.
Yes.
And I think that's the thing that really got to me.
Well, there was actual footage of whaling ships, and they would spot a whale. These whales probably weighed 10,000 pounds, and they were at home in the sea, and then the ship seemed so kind of small and vulnerable, but they would shoot a harpoon and blast it out into the whale, and then you'd see the sea filling with blood from the whale, and they would, you know, they would haul the whale up onto the ship and start slicing him up. It was,
old footage and kind of modern footage, like, and I think that repetitive horror of something as benign and beautiful as a whale in its natural setting was haunting. It became, you know, this haunting image of a massacre.
And right, the haunting, it did repeat. Right, there were three screens, and so there were a lot of images of just simply gorgeous motion of whales swimming. Like, I had never, I suppose other people have seen the contemporary, the new nature films, and the progress in photography of animals, of wild animals, has made such enormous leaps. So, but I was fascinated by the swimming of the whales, their body motion, their fins, and the sinuous butterfly motion of the up and down of their trunks. And the opening of their huge jaws to sweep up all the little plankton or whatever they're eating.
Well, also, the screens had often what looked almost abstract, filled with like flocks of seagulls or monarch butterflies or pelicans or penguins. And they fill the screens in this sort of a moving but flat image that looked more like abstract paintings. And then there were pictures of the Vietnam boat people, and there were pictures of insanity, and there were readings from Moby Dick and the power of the sea and the struggle that man faces. There are amazing pictures of an avalanche and there were some absolutely weird forms that I have no idea what they are. There was a recurring actor in the film, an actor, an older man with mascara, and I have no idea who he was. Do you?
I couldn't find it, but he kind of was, I don't know, he kind of, I think, represented, thoughtful wisdom in a kind of a very weird way. I don't know. He was kind of staring off into space, but I don't know. The film is such a must in this exhibition, because it asks so many questions about our humanity and our construction and deconstruction of the earth, and where are we playing a part in that. And I think that was what really kind of got to me. It was a bombardment of these images on these three screens, and they weren't all the same. They were totally different at all times.
Right. Well, the brochure says this film may be seen as a memorial that challenges the notion of the sea as a politically neutral space. Come on. That seems like, I don't know, it's the planet. It's astounding in its powerful forces. It made me think about those people climbing Everest. What drives people to do such a thing? Tiny human beings paying a lot of money to take such a journey, to risk their lives and risk the lives of other people who are helping them climb this mountain, and leave all their garbage. And sometimes they leave themselves on Everest.
Yeah,
it's it's this planet is nature. It's not meant to be conquered by little human beings. It's to be awed and revered. And there should be plenty of this planet to go around.
Well, I think one of the things that came up is a very, very ancient concept of, you know, hubris or hubris, where the humans in this film are wreaking havoc on the Earth. And also, it kind of takes us from our identity in relationship to the Earth. And I think that's part of it, is like, where are we in relationship to this planet? And we've totally been out of control for so long. And I mean, if you can't sit back and think about that. And there was a quote from the film which knocked me out. It said, the way of killing men and beasts are the same. I mean, that concept is so anti, you know, life. I mean, it's anti-existence. I mean, again, in that destructive sense. But this film really kind of set the stage for us yesterday.
Yeah, it really did. And if we're worried about global warming, which we should be, then why don't we do our best to solve, or at least try to put the brakes on our human activities that are accelerating it?
Well, that's true. I didn't think about global warming there, but what you were saying, Tom, about the and Sheila, about the movie did make you think about the role of humans in nature, their outsized power.
Well, there was a moment of the shark, the feeding frenzy with the sharks and that fish, and then in the other juxtaposition of the film was this Buddhist like prayer or mantra. You know, there was a sensuality, and then of course there's the rawness of what nature could be, and those juxtaposition. Well, the exhibition was interesting in many ways. Once we got through that film, we were almost like, do we really want to see more? and they included some very famous and more traditional and non-contemporary works about global displacement and identity by some very famous artists. And to see these older familiar works in the new context was interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'd never seen those paintings in a sense of a globe, you know, people being displaced. So let's talk for a little bit about that. About that important balance and visual stability in the exhibition, because the exhibition had some uneven spots.
It did.
Anybody want to address one of those great paintings?
Well, when I saw that Arshil Gorky painting, The Artist and His Mother, that's at the National Gallery, and I see it all the time. And it's just, to me, okay, I know he worked for 20 years on that portrait of himself and his mother. And all of a sudden, it just came to life in this context. The whole painting just burst into view. Oh, his mother, she was a refugee. She was dying. She had very sad eyes. It just it came to life in a way I've never seen that painting before.
Well, I mean, he did several versions of him, and he struggled with this entire concept of, and we don't know the factual, but witnessing his mother's starvation. I mean, that is right there enough. I mean, to witness your mother dying of starvation. And you know, they were refugees from Armenia. They left Armenia. One of them went to Greece and London and Los Angeles and Massachusetts, which have huge Armenian population. So, I mean, it fit perfectly in the context of this this exhibition and one of his most famous paintings.
I never had the context to put that painting in because, you know, he's a New York City modernist, and that's how I thought. And then you see this picture of him and his mother, and it's not abstract. For me, always a little confusion about what it read. I did not know any of what you've just said, so that puts it in a context.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it was there. I'm glad to see it. It was alive. And I also want to talk about some of Lewis Hines' photographs.
Very famous.
Yeah. Lewis Hines was a science teacher in New York. And there are some terrific photographs he took on Ellis Island of the immigrants coming in. And he really wanted his photographs to create social change. He actually was never in his lifetime famous. He died very poor. But these images, and I think a lot of it has to do with that, in his photographs, every single person in his photographs is a recognizable portrait, a distinct portrait of each person, children in sweatshops with the child labor in Lower Manhattan. And he documented these people in a way that you could look in, you could look at each person, and they are tremendous. They're tremendous now, and I'm sorry that he didn't live to see the impact of these photographs.
Well, a painting in the show that blew me away was this Yung Ji's oil painting, a Chinese immigrant, and it was painted in 1926. He came from China and went to, he was in art school, came to San Francisco, mm-hmm. and the title of the painting just got to me, is Where Is My Mother? I mean, yeah. I mean, you think about how many immigrants left their parents, left their mother. I mean, my own grandmother never saw her mother again after she left when she was 19 years old. I mean, and she lived into her 80s. They left to go to another place having no idea what the heck's going to happen. And he asked, where is my mother? He has tears in his eyes. I mean, it's not that he didn't love his mother, but he was looking for a new place. And this artist of Chinese background was really never made it in the art world because there was such a huge prejudice against Asians on the West Coast art scene that he's just, the label said that he's just beginning to get some traction because he was an artist his whole life. But being Asian in, you know, at that time in America was just not, you know, it wasn't cool at all, and they were definitely marginalized as a race. So, I mean, that painting is, it really is set the tone for me on a very personal level about what about these people that left their parents for another world and had to leave their parents for a better world.
Yeah, and also there's a photograph by Dorothea Lange. There are several by her, but one of them is a photograph of a notice to vacate all Japanese. The notice was the day after Pearl Harbor. Mm. It was just a notice that they are all going to leave. I think probably we should take a station break now.
The crops are all in and the peaches are rotting. The oranges are piling their creosote dumps. They're flying to the Mexican border to pay all their wages to wait back again. Goodbye to my one, goodbye Rosalita. Adios mi amigos, Jesus y Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane. All they
chasers like outlaws, like hustlers, like thieves.
Goodbye to my one, goodbye Rosalita. Adios mi amigos, Jesus y Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big liberty. We died in your hills and we died in your deserts. We died in your valleys and we died on your plains.
We died 'neath your trees and we died in your bushes. Both sides of that river we died just the same.
Now the sky plane caught fire over Los Gatos Canyon. Like a fireball of lightning, it shook all our hills. Who are these friends all scattered like dry leaves? Radio says they're just deportees.
Goodbye to my one, goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mi amigos, Jesús y María.
Welcome back. You're listening to WOWD LP Tacoma Park. There was a wide selection of works from a host of global displacement events over the last few years, and they have been many. We're going to start the second half of the show to discuss certain works that were important to each of us.
One of the collections that is in the Phillips collection is their series of about 25 paintings by Jacob Lawrence depicting the migration of southern black sharecroppers up north to the cities in the 40s. I always loved this work. It shows, you know, the families waiting on the train station platform, what they're leaving behind, what they're going to. It's not an easy life, what they go to with the crowded tenements, but at least they have greatly increased freedom. There's still discrimination, but they're making a new life. The style is wonderful, warm and open work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. Yeah, these are graphic masterpieces. I mean, the way he arranges the shapes and the spaces. And it's great to see them again in this context of the mm-hmm. exhibition. You know, you go to the Phillips and you see them, but, you know, here you put them together in context of all these other 75 works.
Yeah, I love that they did that. I love that the Phillips added work from their own collection. I had a little bit of difficulty just because the video images, there are other videos that we'll talk about, but they are so powerful. And then paintings, just by their nature, are all quieter. They require some more concentration. So to me, that the migration series, which is fabulous, it's just, it needed to be there, but it can't compete with with the screen, with the light coming from the screen.
That's interesting. I felt they really stood on their own on that wall. But speaking of videos, I'd like to talk about this video by Kiwa K. And the title of the video was Pre-Image, Blind as the Mother Tongue. And I'm going back again to this mother idea. Well, this artist took a pole and he attached kind of like mirrors, kind of like a Alexander Calder mobile, and he said that, you know, he's been poisoned by Western art, but this guy left Iraq and he walked with that pole on his nose through Iraq and Turkey, which is a huge country, and then he goes to Greece, and then he gets on a truck he hides in a truck as a stowaway and ends up in Italy. Now think about that, everyone. You know, he's walking, and the metaphor about his identity is his feet. His feet have become his identity, and And that's where they said, well, where are you based? Where are you from? You're walking from Iraq somewhere else? And he said, my base is my feet. Think about that.
Oh.
It's like a good play on words.
Yeah.
Anyway, he goes and he's walking and moving and stretching. Almost like robotically. I mean, there's part of the video where they steal a sheep from a shepherd in Greece. They kill it because they have nothing to eat, which that's illegal, highly illegal in Greece. And yet he survives. And you know what about that? So the video is quite intriguing. And he goes to Rome and sees all these nude statues in some piazza in Rome, and he says like, well, these are dead people. Maybe in another life they were alive, but I'm still alive and I'm still walking. It was a very touching, expose on what a refugee has to do to survive. And he used his art as a medium, as a means to keep him going.
So, I guess he was a true refugee, having a very difficult passage, but having arrived in the West and made a new life, he became an artist. And he came up with that image of balancing the pole on his nose, which is, it's a balance. I mean, it's a big pole. And he's walking through the streets, visiting the places where he made his first journey. And the voiceover is telling the stories of what happened in these places.
These wharves
and cities and alleys.
Well, I'm going to talk about something. When you first come into the exhibit, you see strange guttural noises, it sounds maybe like a child or somebody in pain, maybe an animal, and you don't know what they're coming from, but they follow you through the exhibit. And then there's this screen, and it is amazing video by Erkan Özcan, and he's a Turkish documentarian. There's a boy, he's maybe 10, and he's deaf and mute. And he's describing this traumatic memory he had just seen of a beheading.
Mm.
And he is so expressive because he's pantomiming the whole situation of this man. And he's made to kneel down, and then they blindfold him, and they shoot him, and he keeps going through it. And it's so horrifying to see this. And also that this boy, he has to talk about it. And it's really remarkable. And all the time he's making these sounds that are just coming out of him.
Yeah, because he's mute. I mean, it deals with the Kurdish issue in southeastern Turkey. And you know, they've been refugees jumping from border to border between Iran, Iraq, Syria, and moving on to Greece and other places now, all parts of Europe. They're fleeing a country where they've been oppressed for so many centuries. And that video just did me in.
Yeah.
That was tough.
Yeah.
It was so surprising, the grace, you said expressiveness, and it's true. It was expressive and so graceful about such a traumatic experience.
Yeah.
Going back to that part of the world, there was a series of drawings that I think they were very well done by Hamid Suleiman. And this artist was born in 1986, and he did this thing in Freedom, called Freedom Hospital, which is a series of pen and ink felt-tip pens that were really well done. And he documented the violence that he saw in the Assad regime in Syria and ISIS, and then the various factions that were fighting each other within Syria. Now, this is a young man, and he was born in 1986, and he sees and documents bombs, people getting imprisoned. I mean, beheadings. I mean, that is just so incredible that someone has to go through that at such a young age and then document it. Was very well done. Those are very well done drawings.
Mm-hmm.
There's a less traumatic images, Benny. I mean, it's three floors. Well, for example, the color photographs of migrants at the border with Mexico. I think it's probably San Diego, and they're standing on one side of the wall looking through at other people. The images are ambiguous. They're not telling you what to think. you're seeing the wall, and you're seeing how people have painted and decorated it from the Mexican side. It's interesting. That's all I can say about it. Perhaps if we talked about it more, we could find out, dig into what is interesting. And you think about the lives of the people. They're not really suffering at this moment. Your empathy does extend out to them.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about another video. It's a video of a group of migrants, and you at first you don't see what's going on, and then you see that these camera people are posing this group of people to photograph them for the press. And the people are very cooperative, and you don't know if they're being compensated or they just like doing it. But they're very sort of happy to be there, and they keep arranging this group of people, sit in front, put the baby on the grandmother's lap. You don't know if they know each other, but it's really a completely fabricated photograph in that they are telling you what to think, but you realize the power of the press. Like, there's some editorializing going on that you probably are not aware of if you just see the photograph. And there's a young boy, maybe he's about 12, and he has a baseball cap. He's very cute. And they ask him to take his shirt off, and he takes his shirt off to show this snaky scar that's on his abdomen. And you can see that he's done it many times before. Let's show the scar, you know, and he's fine, at least proud that he can have this, you know. I just thought that was very interesting to put
What do we call that? Where it starts with meta, but it's about the making of art or journalism.
Right.
You look into their faces, you see that they're maybe Eastern Europeans somehow.
Yeah, they're Bosnians from Herzegovina and they're Albanian Kosovars that were jumping from, you know, all the factions of Yugoslavia because nobody wanted them. And finally the country of Kosovo came into being. But they were constantly being maligned by every group in the Yugoslavian, you know, base. And, I actually was there during the war in Yugoslavia. And, I mean, you could cut tension and stress with a knife. I mean, that's how bad it was. And these people were just, they're scarred. I mean, the children, they're generations of scarred people because they didn't really have a home. And nobody wanted them. Well, there's so much variety in this show. I mean, there's videos, films. There's even sculpture and graphics and painting and drawings. Sheila, how about you on the generalities of the show and how you felt about the Phillips and all? That's really important.
Okay, well, first of all, I wanted to say that the weakness in this show, to me, were the contemporary paintings of refugees. They're just not really very good. They're more like illustrative than having much emotional content. That's just my thing. That's what I see.
Well, I agree with you there.
You know? And I really dislike this large picture by Benny Andrews, and with no real reason for disliking it. And there were some really nice house structures by Beverly Buchanan. It's some of this with me is just taste. My feeling is that the Phillips is the first modern museum in America. And it's been a mission of theirs to keep being modern, even though the main part of their collection has been from the 30s and 40s, from European artists and then American artists. And so in order to keep contemporary, this to me is a far reach from anything they've ever done before. It's political. It's reaching people in a topical way that you never have seen before at the Phillips. And it, as Tom said, it takes up all three floors of the new wing, which I call the new wing. Of the museum. And it's such a pressing topic. I think in the past, the way the Phillips has kept up is to try to have very contemporary, modern painters give them shows. But I think that that's just simply not enough. And now they are reaching a new point, and I applaud them for doing this.
Yeah, I do too. You know, we have our wonderful poet in residence here in Peter Blake, and there's so many poems really that also deal with identity. And I think poets, I could think of so many. I mean, Frank O'Hara, I mean, even Carl Sandburg, Robert Frost. I mean, there are many, many poets that dealt with issues of identity. And, of course, Langston Hughes. So I'd like, I think, in closing on the show, Peter, could you come up with a poem that maybe deals with identity and share it with our listeners?
Well, yes. So Langston Hughes, what a wonderful poet he is. So this is I Too Sing America. I Too Sing America. I am the darker brother. They send me to eat in the kitchen when company comes, but I laugh and eat well and grow strong. Tomorrow I'll be at the table when company comes. Nobody'll dare say to me, eat in the kitchen, then. Besides, they'll see how beautiful I am and be ashamed. I, too, am America.
Thanks, Peter. That's it. Well, we're going to conclude now. And you know, there's so many crises over the world in the last centuries affected millions. And, of course, we're still in that kind of crisis mode today with populations moving. The human race seems to be, you know, shifting in different places. And where do we fit in as a race, as a human race? And are we secure? Are we comfortable? Are we happy? Well, you know, yesterday was the 50th anniversary of Stonewall, and there'll be a lot of celebrations today. And it was a pivotal moment in American history. And a large segment of our population was emotionally, physically, and psychologically displaced in many ways because of their sexual orientation. They decided that they weren't going to be marginalized and punished anymore for this. And I think this goes in tune with our exhibition today. How are we going to change our country where freedom is seen as, in America, is seen as the place in the world to do that and to be free? And so I think we need to identify ourselves first as being part of the human race and loving that. And I think it's a great start. The exhibition at the Phillips, The Warmth of Other Suns, Stories of Global Displacement, goes on until September 22nd, and we highly suggest you reflect on this experience and think about our fortunes and misfortunes in the world community that we all live in. We hope you've enjoyed the show.
Thank you. Well, I done got so I can't hardly bear you out of my sight. Hold up.
WOWDLP, Tacoma Park.